Welcome to the Wednesday, October 5th, 2022 Thurston County Planning Commission meeting. The Thurston County Planning Commission is a citizens advisory committee to the Board of County Commissioners on land use planning matters such as comprehensive plan and zoning ordinance amendments. Planning Commission actions are in the form of recommendations to the County Commissioners or the final decision makers. All Planning Commission meetings are open to the public. Citizens are welcome to observe all Planning Commission briefings and work session. Public comment is allowed on those topics for which a public hearing has not been held. With that, we're going to start off with a sound check and introduction. So online, we have Commissioner Hansen.
Present.
We'll start down here with you, Commissioner Day.
Derek Day, District 1.
Jim Simmons, District 3.
Owen Neely, District 1.
Scott Nelson, District 3.
Doug Barman, District 2. Mary Halverson, District 2.
Kevin Bessinger, District 1.
And I am Eric Casino from District 2. With that, if everybody's had a chance to look at the agenda, I do need to make one amendment to it, and that is to add the September 21st minutes for our consideration. Thank you. All right, with that, I will call for the vote on approving the agenda as amended.
Commissioner Bessinger.
Aye.
Commissioner Day.
Aye.
Commissioner Simmons.
Aye.
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 Commissioner Casino.
Aye. Agenda is approved. With that.
Thank you, Chris.
Yes. Oh, Commissioner Nelson.
Aye. It's still approved. Thank you very much. With that, has everybody had a chance to look over the meeting minutes that were added for September 21st? So I did entertain a motion.
Second.
Is there any discussion on those minutes? With that, I'll call for the vote.
Commissioner Hansen.
Aye.
Commissioner Nelson.
Aye.
Commissioner Passenger.
Aye.
Commissioner Day.
Aye.
Commissioner Simmons.
Aye.
Commissioner Wheatley.
Aye.
Commissioner Farman.
Aye.
Commissioner Halverson.
Aye.
Commissioner Casino.
Aye. The minutes are accepted and accepting the audio as the official meeting record. All right, with that, we'll move on to the public communication portion of our meeting. Do we have anybody online today? I think we might.
Yes.
Okay, so I'll run through the rules real quick. Those participating via Zoom, please choose the raise your hand option if you wish to address the Planning Commission. You'll be promoted as a panelist when it's your turn to speak and be seen. To be seen, turn on your camera. If you're dialing in, press star 9 to raise your hand. Make sure you also choose star 6 to unmute yourself. The 3-minute timer will show on one of the video screens to help keep track of your time. And with that, we will start out with Ms. Persons.
Yes, just a second here. I'm Charlotte Persons and I live in Northeast Olympia. I've spoken to the Planning Commission in the past on the part of Black Hills Audubon Society, but tonight I speak as a private person. I'm concerned about some of the private owner requests for inclusion in the Grand Mound urban growth area and thus their conversion to light industrial or commercial land uses. Before the Planning Commission makes those decisions, these areas should be carefully studied for the impact those intensive uses will have on tributaries to the Chehalis River. For example, the Black Lake Quarry is less than half a mile from that river, and other sites are actually bisected by Prairie Creek, a tributary to the Chehalis River during rainy months. As you are aware, many federal, state, and tribal efforts are being made to restore the Chehalis estuary to health and improve runs of endangered and game salmon. Annexation and de facto rezoning will be the green light for the intensive development that could have a negative effect on that estuary. I know that there have been few recent comments from citizens on the proposed extension of the Grand Mound UGA. I believe that these environmental problems are below the radar of the community who are only now beginning to take notice. You vote tonight on the hearing date for the new Grand Mound sub area. I ask you to make that hearing not November 2nd, as suggested in your packet, but instead a date further into 2022, such as December 7th. This will give sufficient time for these issues to be thoroughly aired in print and community forums. I also urge you to indeed have an open house. Thank you for the opportunity to speak about these issues.
Thank you, Ms. Persons. In the boardroom today, we have Wilmoski. Wilmoski, yeah. If either one of you would like to go first,
sure.
You're up first.
Sure.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Wilmoski.
Hello, I'm Carolyn Wilmoski, owner of the property at 6711 198th Avenue Southwest. And I would like to have the IGA expanded so that that we could proceed with other things besides being in agriculture. So.
Thank you very much, please.
Yep. Hi, I'm Brian Wilmoski, Carolyn's son. We brought some new information. You know, what we've heard from the planners is that their data says that there's enough land down in the Grand Mount area for growth. And so we went into it and we had an appraiser look at it, give us some data. At the same time, Kelch Communities approached us and said, this area is the growth area. And what their data said, and I'd like to know who I could give it to, you know, here in the commission, but is that a lot of the land that's down there that is included currently, there's no wherewithal. The people that own it, you know, have not either the inclination or the finances to move it to, you know, affordable housing. And Grand Mound's the only place we're going to have affordable housing in this county, the way real estate's been over the last several years. So we'd like to give you our side of the information too. Kelch Communities information was very much the same. Surrounding our property, again, it's already much higher density zone. So we're an island in the middle of, you know, zoning. Water and sewer is right there already. And just down the street, Kelch Communities did a property. It was all pre-sold, you know, prior to even being built. So the market would suggest that there's a want and a need there, and certainly financially that area is going to be much more affordable in this county than others. So I'd like you to consider that. Commissioner Mincer, one of his ideas was maybe some land could be taken out and this could be put in. So those are just all things I'd like you guys to consider. And I didn't know if there's somebody we could give that information to.
I do, Dina. It'll come to me and then we'll go ahead.
Great. Can you get your card and then I'll give it to you guys? I don't have it with me.
I will give it to you before we go.
Thank you very much. With that, I don't think there's anybody else in the boardroom that would like to address us. So we will move on to the next item of business, which is...
I just saw another hand raise online.
Oh, okay.
Lee Reiner.
Online we have Lee Reiner. You're up. You'll have to unmute yourself.
Can you hear me?
We can now, thank you.
Oh, thank you, sir. Yes, I would like to speak tonight regarding the expansion of the UGA. I have several friends who have involved themselves in farming in Thurston County. And as you know, in Thurston County, there has been a big push to have some sort of sustainable farmland so that for future generations, we will have a way to eat if for whatever reason, I-5 gets shut down again. This rezone issue regarding having developments come in, to me, is going too fast. I agree with the last speaker that we need to ask for these hearings to go into December. I know several of my friends who have been involved in farming have not been able to attend to these meetings like they should. And it seems only prudent. Let's face it, there are so many things going on in government right now. We just had a pandemic 2 years. We've all been stymied, and now we're just trying to get the ball going again. So I'm hoping that you will have not make this decision until, as was suggested, December 7th. I believe that the Chehalis River, the Black Lake, Quarry, and Prairie Creek are all connected somehow, and the water quality issue is vital for us to understand. Everyone wants clean water, but do we have a study talking about the connection of these water bodies? Do we have a full understanding of the nature of the aquifer that would bring us water for future? We talk about development, but do we have an understanding of the water coming for this development? I don't think we do. And that's why I'm asking to put off this decision until December 7th so that the community can really get involved and start discussing these things on a meaningful level. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. That last hand is already.
That's a new hand.
That's a new one?
Yep. Newman.
Newman, you're up. Hey, Newman, you'll have to unmute yourself.
Unmute. Okay, there we go.
There we go. We hear you.
Okay, great. I was going to mention I agree with some previous speakers about a hurried process for expansion of urban growth area. Something that I didn't hear anything today was, number one, the housing market is going down now. Interest rates are up. People, inventories are going up. Etc. So is the county going to be on tap to supply the roads for any new zoning for residential? What about water systems and sewage systems? So there's been examples in the past in other counties, for instance, McClary, where they annexed a huge portion of the north side of town. They ended up expanding their sewer plant, and then nobody built anything. So the residents in McClary now are paying for a very expensive sewer plant that they don't need. Anyway, I think extending the hearing to December 7th is a good idea. And anybody that wants to see the UGA go through should stipulate about the costs for infrastructure to the taxpayers of Thurston County. Thank you.
Thank you very much. It looks like we do not have anybody else wishing to address the Planning Commission. So with that, we'll move on to item number four of our agenda, which is a continued business on the Grand Mountain Sub-Area Plan with our planners, Caitlin Nelson and Amelia Schwartz.
I didn't need to share it. Where did I find that? Let's get out of it. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'm using the copy of Teams. Or sorry, Zoom. Perfect. Thank you. Good evening, planning commissioners. I am Caitlin Nelson, associate planner, and we have Amelia with us as well, who has been working specifically on the lot list and the design standards. And I want to start off the work session just going over really quick what the next steps are, because I want to clarify what we're asking of you as we review this information. We aren't asking you to make a decision on these land use applications right now. We want you to hear from the public first, and then you can request more changes to the draft and make decisions on your recommendation to the board after the public hearing. So tonight, keep that in mind, that the goal is to get you to the point where you're comfortable with setting a public hearing date to receive public input. We're talking tonight about the land use amendment and rezoning requests.
You gotta advance the slides on that.
Yeah.
You want me to?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're talking more about the land use amendments and rezoning requests, which, as we've mentioned before, need to be consistent with countywide planning policies, comprehensive plan policies, and state law. And just really quick, at the last meeting, there was a request for a map with water features and for a copy of the land use applications, both of which were provided to you. There was also a request for tribal trust lands, but the three parcels shown for the Highway 99 commercial corridor site are the only properties that show up with that ownership. There are most likely others. They're just not easy to find or look up because they're by different names.
Yeah, thank you.
In addition to the policies that we've discussed before, the Department of Commerce provides a guidebook on updating UGAs and interpreting requirements for the Growth Management Act. It states that jurisdictions should first review and use policy to achieve consistency between plan development and actual development. It discourages adding vacant land for development, as this doesn't create incentives to use the current vacant or underutilized areas first. Sub-area planning and policies around revitalization can help stimulate development, and the Growth Management Act requires that the county to review patterns of development with the Buildable Lands Program. And I only mention that because there's been some question about the Buildable Lands Report, and it is a requirement for us to base our analysis off of it. And it specifically states that the UGA can be expanded if development patterns create pressure in the UGA that exceed available development lands. And I wanted to point that out because that is different than how it has been worded in other locations. And I think that's a different way of thinking about it. There are also a few additional comprehensive plan policies that should be considered that aim to prioritize infill development. And as we've talked about at previous work sessions, in order to expand the UGA, we must show reasoning for how the proposal is either required to provide land growth or providing an overriding public benefit beyond the area proposed. The county has expanded the UGA twice on record, once in 2013 in the Rainier UGA to connect a fire station, and once in 2014 in the Lacey UGA for a school district. So there are three properties proposing an expansion to the UGA, and one rezone outside of the UGA. I have these available for reference if we need to go to them and talk about them. But for now, I'm going to continue on with the other properties. Rezoning a rural property requires consistency with the comprehensive plan, which would include the three properties requesting an expansion to the UGA and the one property that's outside of the UGA, but just requesting a rezone, which is the Jackson property. And that requires that the property meet one of these three, which is that circumstances have substantially changed since the current land use designation was adopted, that the rezone would promote the general welfare or of the affected community, or that the rezone would maintain or enhance environmental quality.
There were three elements to a rezone. Could you repeat that?
And this is specifically for the rural properties. Yeah. So yeah, only outside of the UGA. It is that circumstances have substantially changed since the current land use designation and zoning was adopted. And the definition, characteristics, or locational guidelines for the current district no longer apply. Or the rezone would promote the general welfare of the affected community, or the rezone would maintain or enhance environmental quality. And again, I have this available for reference. And then there are four properties within the UGA that are requesting a rezone. There is the Steelhammer Family Trust property, which is currently undeveloped. The Fire Station 14, which is an old unused fire station, which I believe the main reason cited is that the traffic is too busy to use it as a fire station anymore. So it has been abandoned for a little while now. Morgan property, which is also undeveloped, and then Old Highway 99 Commercial Corridor, which is the Great Wolf Lodge. And with that, we are requesting that a public hearing be set for November 2nd to receive public input. And like I mentioned at the beginning of the presentation, that would entail a couple things. Once you schedule a public hearing, we would work to provide an online story map explaining what is included in the update. We would schedule an open house for the community to learn and ask questions before the hearing. And then we would invite the public to review the sub-area plan and the draft code. We would receive written public comment up until the hearing date, and then we would receive oral testimony at the hearing.
Can you expand on us what you plan for with the open house this time? I know we've had other open houses down there, but what would this open house look like and where would it be?
We're looking at a couple different locations. It would be preferred that it be in Grand Mound or Rochester. Mm-hmm. So we're looking there first, most likely the week before the hearing. And the idea would be to provide the materials in a way that are easy to digest and answer any questions, see if we can, see if there's any comment that we could receive there. It would just, I don't think we've worked out the details of exactly everything that we would provide, but it's supposed to be very interactive.
Would it be exclusive to Thurston County staff, or like the last open house down at the high school there had people from the county as well as many other agencies providing input on different things? And I don't know if any of that's important to our particular aspect right now, but would you even invite those people back? Chris, do you remember that open house?
So, yes. So in this event, we would probably reach out to Public Works so that they would come talk about transportation down there, talk about water and sewer down there, and if there are any other areas that we've heard of concern, we would.
So you think this open house would be exclusively to county staff and probably from a few different departments to address all the different issues from?
Yeah, this.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Does anybody have
a? I'm sorry. I just have a question. Like the.
I am going to have to ask you to. My God. Just stand up
too. I just have a question about the tribal trust lands. How much real authority do we have over that?
Not a lot. It doesn't really matter that it is not zoned consistent with commercial or industrial. It's more for consistency in how we view our mapping. So if we see that we have a big piece of industrial land and it's not being used that way, it's just easier for us to see what is available.
Okay. So when I hear you say not a lot, so the tribe could actually put a hotel on it or something. Am I thinking wrong or right? Or
that is my understanding.
That is correct. The tribe, Thurston County does not have permitting authority over the tribes. They are a sovereign entity.
Okay, and so that has come into the TRPC's thinking?
Yes.
Okay, so we're losing 43 acres, so we don't know what. So I guess I'm trying to figure out, you know, or is it an exchangeable piece for maybe like adding some other residential, or I guess this is industrial right away, but I don't know. I get what we're doing. I'm trying to figure out because I'm a realtor. I'm a landowner guy, you know, and how do we accommodate these people that have bought properties that maybe they want to retire, maybe they want to live happy the rest of their lives or whatever. But then I see some kind of like the state, you know, how are we considering the RCWs in these things? It seems like we're almost blocked because the TRPC is saying that we have enough for the next 20 years. Is that correct?
Yes, but excuse me if I misspoke before. TRPC removes lands that are owned by tribal trusts from our
community. Okay, there. That's
Commissioner Wheatley, you had something?
Yeah, well, a couple of things. I have a question, but am I on or off? That's my first question.
There's a little bit.
There we go. Okay, now I'm on. Okay. On the, I asked a question in that memo that I sent out that might go to some of your concern, and that was whether the county was planning to or had approached the tribe. I was kind of looking for it's HB 17. Somebody help me. The one that says that was passed in 21.
1818?
No, no. The one that says that the county or that that for planning jurisdictions should provide the tribes with an opportunity to collaborate, should go to the tribes and ask if they want to collaborate. And it goes into discussion about how that collaboration can work, such as the memorandum of understanding. So one of my questions was, has that, is that in the works or is that planned? And then I had a second question that isn't related to that at all after that.
Okay, so I had mentioned in previous meetings that the previous project manager for this has had communication with tribes. I did reach out to them again just to verify that, and they responded that they would like to receive information during the comment period and that they would review it and respond at that time.
And then the second question was about going back. One of the pieces of property is a request to not expand the UGA, but to change the zoning from rural, I forget the density. But
Jackson property you're talking about?
Yeah, to rural industrial, RRI. So are there standards, like you just talked about, things to consider for an expansion? Is there a sort of a similar list of things to consider for change in zoning outside?
Yeah, so that property would be included in this rural rezone policy section of the comprehensive plan that also applies to those properties that are requesting UGA expansions. So the policy is requiring that we find an overriding public benefit. That is one step with the UGA expansions. The second step is looking at what zone they're requesting that it be changed to. And so in that case, they have to meet this requirement as well. So the Jackson property would also have to show that it meets one of these three policies.
Go ahead, Commissioner Pessing.
Can you go to slide 3? So the bottom checkbox, all must be consistent with countywide planning policies, with comp plan policies and state law. Mm-hmm. Of these projects or zoning request changes, are you concerned about any of them related to these three elements?
That's a good question. We have to... I'm not going to say that I have outright concern for any of them, but we do, the Planning Commission does have to provide documentation for how it meets these policies that I'm providing. So if the Planning Commission makes a decision on any of these and they're challenged, the documentation that is provided for how it meets these policies in the comprehensive plan will be evaluated, and the decision on whether or not that challenge will be overturned or not will be based on that. So all I can do is provide you with what we know about the properties, and then you as the Planning Commission would get to make the decision on if it meets those or not. But we do have to document that.
Well, why wouldn't you provide us that information now? I mean, that doesn't seem right. I mean, you want us to talk about it and then make a decision on it, but why wouldn't you be able to provide us the information now as to whether it's consistent with countywide policies and county policies and state law? That would seem, for every property on here that's being considered, I would think that would be something that the staff would tell us.
I'll step in here. I think that's our job to figure out. That's not staff's job to tell us. We're supposed to make the decision. We have all the countywide planning policies. It's in the comp plan.
Yeah, but we don't know all those countywide planning policies, Scott. You might. You've been here for 15 years.
Yeah.
Some of us just came on in January and February, and we don't. So I'm asking the question of the staff who knows what those policies are to tell us which of these seven properties is consistent with countywide planning policies.
Didn't in our packets when each of these applications came in kind of outline their justification for why it would be within policy to make the request that they wanted, implicitly or explicitly? I mean, when we looked at the one, like, take for example, the Black Lake Quarry one, well, we got a pretty good memorandum from, or a pretty good letter from them today about why it would be easy to justify bringing them into the UGA on this particular project just on environmental concerns alone, because it will stop them from digging down an extra 100 feet. I think a lot of these applications that we've seen do have some form of justification, and whether or not we agree with that justification is a whole nother story, but I think that there's at least the groundwork for what the justification is.
Can I chime in real quick from the video chat, if
please
I
do.
May?
Please do.
To touch on process and Commissioner Haverson's, sorry, I can't see very well in the boardroom, but I believe it was Commissioner Haverson that was speaking. We provide general information up front. I wouldn't say that any one of these properties is a larger concern than another, but some of these properties, particularly the UGA expansions, there's a higher bar that we need to hit in what type of findings are being provided in order to make the change. It's just a higher burden of proof that will need to be met. And the reason that we don't go into extreme amount of detail before we ask the commissioners to set a public hearing is because you may hear from the public, you may hear from 200 members of the public that they outright don't want that change to happen. And so that may be enough justification for the Planning Commission to make a recommendation one way or another without going through all of those findings. On the contrary, you might get support for an item and then you can dive into what the exact findings are. So we provide that general information before a hearing, but really at this stage, we're looking for what the community thinks about these specific site changes. And then after that, we go into more detail.
Yeah, but Maya, that doesn't answer my question. I mean, there's a pretty simple one. It says all must be consistent with countywide planning policies. It looks like county policies and state law. I'm just asking the question of these seven properties, each property, are they consistent with those three things? Yes or no? And if not, why not? Now we can get the information from the public. We can read the notes and letters that they send in and stuff like that. But that should be a very simple question that should be able to be answered. Because if there's any inconsistencies with those policies or laws, then we should be informed of it.
So there was an analysis of that provided in the memo from the first meeting. It referenced the countywide planning policies with a link to the document. And some of the things to consider for each property that may or may not be consistent with those policies. But sort of like what Maya was talking about, not all of it is black and white. If you look at the at these UGA expansions that were approved before, the Rainier UGA expansion was pretty much a unanimous decision. But the Lacey UGA expansion for the school district was, it actually had a minority report. And that was mostly due to the fact that some of the planning commissioners didn't think that there was great planning done because the property was purchased after the UGA had been created. So they knew full well that it was outside of the UGA and that they would have to look at special conditions in order to expand. They didn't provide a report showing that they looked at other locations for where they could build instead. And that was the reasoning that they provided, but it was still passed. So it's things like that you need to consider. These policies are just that, they're policies. So they're, there are different ways of interpreting them.
Okay. How many open houses have we had today on this?
There have been four.
I believe.
And this process for Grand Mound was started like 2016 or something like that?
2017.
Thank you, ma'am. So it's been a long time. What's the timeline for notification of another open house that you want to have a week before the 2 November public hearing? Isn't it like 2 weeks in the paper or something like that?
Maya, do you know that off the top of your head?
So ideally, we would have an open house that weekend or the week before the Planning Commission public hearing. And if we can get it scheduled and secure a venue in time, we would notice that with the legal notice that goes out for the Planning Commission public hearing. So that would be 20 days from the hearing, just slightly less than that, probably between 10 and 14 days before the actual open house.
We're talking about in the next 7 days.
There's additional notification that we do for the land use amendments. So we are required to do a mailing notice to all landowners that are within a certain distance of the properties that we're doing these site-specific change considerations on. So in addition to an open house down in the community, there'll be a mailing notice to all of the surrounding neighbors for these land use changes.
And that would also include the notification on the open house and the public hearing date, huh?
Yeah, we can include the open house, but it'll definitely include the public hearing date as well.
The other question I had was, and I appreciate the map of the wetland areas and the creek and the water bodies for Black Lake Quarry, because that was a question we had last time. And you told us that the only property that was impacted by the creek was the Deskin property. But it also seems to be greatly impacted by both wetlands and the creek.
The Black Lake property?
The Deskins property.
Yes, the Deskins property does seem to be.
So there would be a lot of Washington state laws with the Shoreline Act and the Shoreline Master Program that we're getting ready to, that's already been sent forward to the Board of County Commissioners. So the setbacks on that property, I don't know how in the heck they would be able to do anything on that property for planned industrial park. I mean, that's what it's been, they want to zone it as, right? So, I mean, I'm just kind of confused as to how they would be able to do anything on that property with that kind of, with the Washington state law and the county policies that are in effect now for the setbacks for those creeks and wetland areas. But for those people that are viewing and that have talked tonight, the Planning Commission has done we've done a lot of look at the water bodies in this Grand Mound area and the UGA and the creek that runs through it and the Chehalis River impact and stuff like that. And none of these properties come close to those things except for the Deskin property. So I don't believe any of the other properties have any impact unless someone certainly can come up to a public hearing or an open house and tell us that they can. What we've been shown by the staff and what we can see, there isn't any other impact on water bodies except for the Deskin property. But I would certainly like to know more about the, like you said, Scott, the county policies and stuff and the concerns that the staff has. So, any of these properties.
I was just looking through my packet, and what I have here today has countywide planning policies, comprehensive plan policies on page 20, 21, and 22. Point out that I don't want staff telling us if these comport with these policies. That's our decision to make.
Yeah,
no. If staff makes that decision,
I didn't say make a decision. I said inform us.
Commissioner Pessinger?
Two questions. One, it's black and white. I don't know the exact definition or the specific details, but of these eight, are any of these vacant land? And then question two is, we heard talk from at least two public commenters, and then Barry's now making some comment about this affecting water. The comments I heard were about an aquifer. How does the aquifer relate to these properties? Yeah, especially Black Lake Quarry.
That's a good question. This would have to go through a CEPA process. So at this point, we haven't had the kind of studies done that would tell us exactly what the impact there could be. I know that with mining land, it can be complicated because they can either continue mining it and get closer to the aquifer, or they can fill it and develop on top of it, or whatever the situation may be. Whatever they do, they're going to have to get more reports done and be compliant with CEPA.
And then the first question about vacant land, do you know that?
Right, vacant land. Lomoski property is vacant. I believe there is one house / farm from Deskin. Black Lake is mining, so technically not. I believe there's a home here. The Steelhammer Family Trust is vacant. The fire station is not. Morgan is vacant. And Raymond Lodge is not.
So are we concerned about the Department of Commerce guidance that discourages use of vacant land in these decisions?
It discourages expanding the UGA when there is vacant land available that can be infilled. So that would be something to consider in those expansions.
Thank you.
Commissioner Wheatley?
Yeah, another thing to consider. Well, I have a question, and then I wanted to circle back to Commissioner Halverson's comments. Could we get more information, and maybe this would be good for the open house too, about, I was looking at the capital facilities plan stuff that we were doing, and I was looking at the Grand Mound part, and it looks like about $6 million is going to go into the, the county would like to put about $6 million into the water and sewer system more, you know, would like to invest that in the fairly near future. And it looked to me like that was going to be funded primarily through rates, charging for the utility. So can we get more information about the planning around that and how the county is thinking about doing that most efficiently and at the lowest cost to the ratepayers? Like, especially when we're thinking about these expansions or land, changes in land use, you did provide us, I think, with the map of the, of the water system phases of expansion. But it would be really helpful to have a sense of how the county thinks about how to roll this out the most cheaply and efficiently for the users. So, could that be part of the open house maybe or something like that?
Well, that gets a little bit complicated. There is a project on the CIP for 2026, I believe, to expand the infrastructure for the water system. You're right about the payments for it. It is currently in the drafting process, being reviewed by Department of Ecology, I believe, the updated draft plan that is being worked on by Public Works currently. As far as costs go, that's not something that we can get in for this process, but we can look at updating policies in the sub-area plan if we want to try to make a connection to the water plan and the sewer plan. But as far as costs for ratepayers go, I don't think that's something we can handle with this part.
Okay, well, I raise it because I read sort of the 96 Grand Mound sub-area plan, and the history of the plan is that the reason that the sub-area was created was essentially to build this utility and to do it cheaply and efficiently. And also, and this kind of heads into this hydrology question, I don't think we yet have a complete mapping because this critical area, this critical aquifer recharge area is mapped entire, you know, the whole of the UGA is considered extremely critical. And according to the 96 and maybe the current revision, and this is another question, back then it was the sole water source for the Grand Mound residents. Is that still the case?
Unfortunately, I don't know.
Okay, well, it seems really important for us to think about because that, you know, for instance, when we're thinking about how both zoning and the landscape guidelines and things like that, the really critical issue here, and it may go to this question of industrial zoning in particular, is that you don't want to pollute the aquifer. That is the real, that's the reason why the sewer system was created in the first place, was that they were concerned that with further growth on septic, it was not going to be good. And it was limiting to how much development could happen. So for us, I think it's really, really important to understand the rules and the guidelines around how you handle being on a extremely critical aquifer recharge area, because it seems very relevant, especially if it is the sole water source. So I think we'd want to know that. So that's part of the hydrology. And it's a really important part of the hydrology. And I think it needs to be emphasized and put back into, like in the Grand Mound sub-area update, that language in the introductory part is actually kind of taken out. It's in the original, and a lot of the introduction is from the original 96, but the language about the aquifer is actually not there so much. And I think it's really important to have that in there because it's a really key point. And I think it helps, you know, part of the, you know, I read the written comment that came in, and I think there's maybe a misunderstanding about, you know, sub-area plans and UGAs don't always mean that you want to hyper-develop an area. You do want to have it be urban, but in the case of Grand Mound, I think we need to be really careful and really look at the comments about what people have said they want Grand Mound to be, because there's all this language about keeping the rural character. There's language about protecting the water supply. And there's a lot of language about wanting to have service, you know, enough density for services to be efficiently provided. But that's not the same thing as wanting to turn it into this kind of, you know, big urban core thing. And so, you know, we need to be sort of, as a planning commission, I think it's really helpful to us to have as much information about these other layers as we can get to understand the purpose. So I think the utility is really important, especially if the county is planning on putting $6 million more into it and charging people for that. I think it would be helpful for us to know what the, you know, there are, ecology does have guidelines around these aquifers. It would be helpful for us to know that what's going on is consistent with those. And also, going back to Prairie Creek, it's helpful, I think, and I'll ask if this is correct, is it rated as a salmon stream? Because if it is, then I kind of want to walk back my feelings about whether there should be shoreline, you know, a shoreline zone zoning possibility, because it does cut right through the heart of the UGA. It's not just that Duskin property where that matters. So is it a salmon stream?
Yeah, looking it up.
We'll come back to that answer, Commissioner Carmen.
Yeah, number actually. Okay. The Black Lake Fork property, on the original map, I just thought they were all lakes. They're not lakes, but, you know, holes in the ground to be dug. This map that you sent out now, most of those are wetlands.
So that is, that's just something that happens with mapping where it uses aerial layers. So it visually sees that it's wet there, but they are not regulated wetlands. They are mining.
They're all man-made?
Yeah.
Okay. So each of these are basically lakes. I mean, they're holes in the ground with water.
Yeah.
And is there a reclamation plan in effect for Black Lake Quarry property? They all have to have a reclamation.
Yeah.
You know, when we're done, this is what we're going to do to fix it. We don't have any control over that because we learned that with the Shoreline Master Program. That's why it got taken out of the SMP. But they have to have one. So knowing what that is would certainly be helpful in thinking about how to zone this property. And there looks like an awful lot of lakes there. So that do we know the size of these man-made lakes?
I don't know if we even know if the shorelines are consistent. They may change from week to week depending on where the bulldozer goes.
It could be when they're done.
Yeah.
And then they do the reclamation, then it reverts to regular land. And then the county takes control and all of the Shoreline Master Program and all that takes effect on it. Looks like a lot of water there. So it'd be good to understand that. The second thing is kind of in a response on the aquifer. We are all in, this whole area is a rain-fed aquifer. So it's all critical. It's Lacey is fed by the rain. The aquifer is fed by the rain, not by rivers. So most of northern Thurston County is all fed by rain.
Commissioner Pestinger, you had something?
Yeah. I will still presume when they mark a map as critical for an aquifer, that means something. I just wanted to second Commissioner Meany's comments about not polluting the aquifer because we're literally looking right here at rural rezone policies, and Part C says the rezone would maintain or enhance environmental quality as a requirement.
Were you able to read the letter that came in today from? Okay.
I just really quickly, yeah, I was kind of wondering about that quarry property, if it's a perched water table or something. Like, is it high? Is it unusually high water? Is there like a clay layer underneath? But yeah, I mean, when you think about pollution, you have to think about the vadose zone. And if it may be there is no real vadose zone, it just is straight, it goes straight into the aquifer right there. It would be really helpful to know that.
It is the aquifer.
Maybe.
The upper aquifer.
Yeah, without any kind of vadose zone, yeah.
Just like all the lakes in the area.
Commissioner, we haven't heard from you yet. Do you have anything to say on this?
I think one thing I think I might want to mention, so when we think about water, everything that happens in the watershed makes a difference. So it's not just the things that are proximate to streams. I think the kind of the rules that we're talking about between the commission and the staff, I find a little bit confusing in that it would be our job to dig into the policies and justify these things. I would think it would be more of our job to make a recommendation based on staff work rather than us to do all the policy digging work. So I think that was, I think I would find it difficult to make a decision at this point. I think the public would have a hard time understanding what some of the justifications are. I work with the public in my day job, and one thing you don't want to do is just open the doors and say, what do you think? That's not a good way to get constructive feedback or help people understand what's going on or what the trade-offs are. So some of what I'm hearing about the process is concerning.
Hanson, we haven't heard much from you this evening. Do you have anything?
I've been thinking a lot about this comment, the written comment from Toyer Strategic Advisors, particularly how they claim that the buildable lands report is not accurate to the facts on the ground, apparently. And I wonder if that is what is kind of the foundation that underpins some of this zoning and some of the size of the UGA. And if that needs to change, I'm not in favor of approving any changes to the UGA or any changes to zoning until we go back and fix that. Because it would seem if we're making decisions on a property by property basis, because the facts that, you know, the buildable lands report that underpins the decisions that have been made in the past is not accurate, then we're making decisions that aren't tethered to anything. And it, my gut feeling is that we have to go back and make sure that that's accurate or updated before we can make decisions about any of this other stuff. I don't know. That's just kind of how I'm feeling right now.
Caitlin, before you told us that we have to use the buildable lands report from TRPC to base all of this on, is that exclusively what we have to base this on, or is it, we have addition to?
It's in addition to. There are obviously things that aren't accounted for in the buildable lands report. It does remove properties with critical areas on it from the inventory. So those properties,
like this Deskin property where there's tons of critical area on it?
But also that wouldn't be included with redevelopment potential anyways, because it's zoned RRR 1-5. So that would be the extent of that property build out. Where it becomes more applicable is with the industrial and the commercial lands, where we're talking about, first of all, the one discrepancy in the buildable lands is that it doesn't differentiate between commercial and industrial land. So they look at employment possibility and they look at what the employment growth projections are. So their analysis does show that they have enough of those types of lands to accommodate the employment growth. It doesn't look at the difference between industrial lands and commercial lands, and we don't have a way of analyzing that right now. There's currently an industrial lands study that will be conducted next year, but unfortunately we're not going to be able to reference that right now. But as far as our properties that are that have critical areas on site being included, no, they're not. They are removed from what we have available.
I think, yeah, some of this, I mean, I don't think we should get too wrapped around one comment letter at this point, but I think that given that it directly criticizes the buildable lands report, I think at the very least we should give the TRPC opportunity. I mean, if that's something that is of great concern to you, we should give the TRPC an opportunity to see this letter and rebut anything that needs to be rebutted before we go much further forward with it.
Well, without getting too
far, I know the buildable lands report pretty well. I was one of the members of the public that was involved with that. So I'm not sure that all those assertions are entirely correct.
I don't want to tell staff how to do their job, but if during this open house we were able to invite TRPC to answer any questions at the open house, that would not hurt my feelings. Go ahead.
Well, one of the things we're comparing here is the existing property is zoned rural 1-5. And if it's changed, like I'm going back to Deskin again, it says it removes 15. So, I mean, we're trying to look the balance of we're taking out 15 and we're adding one over here. But if you look at the map, there's no way you can add 15 houses on that 75 acres. Unless you make it, because to take 5 acres and you
point out that the map is an aerial picture. It's not based on any actual survey. And I can almost guarantee you that the wetlands on that property are not that big.
Okay.
I've been on that property.
Do you believe these critical areas that are outlined here are including a buffer or just fairly close to being mapped?
I don't think that it's buffer. but I'm not positive. And we would also need to have somebody go out and look at it to even verify.
Yeah. I guess that brings us to the next. We can talk about all these eight different projects if we want. One of the things we do is decide on when we're going to have our public hearing to get this stuff going. I know we've heard a little bit this evening about putting it off for a month. I am actually very hesitant about that because I would like to see us do this stuff before we go into the holidays and nobody's showing up. So I think the sooner that we get, we're still not going to make any decisions just because we have an open house and a public hearing doesn't mean the next day we make decisions on recommendations. It gives us an opportunity to get more comment and we can have more work sessions after that. But I think that we will have better attendance if we get our public hearing and our open house going before we move into the holiday session. But this is obviously open for discussion.
My only concern about that is the timeline. As I was asking Maya.
You think they can't get it done quick enough?
I don't think so. They haven't even got a location. They haven't got a venue located.
Does that seem like a real challenge, Maya? Is Maya going to put it together, or are you folks going to put it together?
Yes, we're going to put it together. You'd be amazed at how quickly you can do.
I mean, they're recommending the 2nd of November.
So. Yeah. Yeah. I don't think you're making that recommendation because you think it's unobtainable. Correct. Yeah. Go ahead, Commissioner Simmons.
Is there a 30-day notice over past that? So who's the 2nd?
20.
Okay, so thank you.
Yeah. Commissioner Anderson, you want to hear?
I would intend to agree with you. I've always been not a big fan of moving here into December because even early December, you're getting into holiday party season.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some people have commitments on those nights, and this is probably for a lot of people, this is something that they might come speak on, but it's maybe not a priority.
Yeah.
So, friends, I would swear part is the same night. So let me put that in. those types of things.
Does anybody else have any concerns on? Oh, Commissioner Gates
had a comment. So, we heard from the public today, suggesting moving it into December. It also just doesn't have to be the beginning of November. We can push it a week, week and a half, just to buy a little bit more time.
To the 16th.
What's that?
It'd have to be 2 weeks.
Why would it have to be 2 weeks? Push it out further?
To another planning commission meeting.
No, if we could set it for in 20 days, or set it in 30 days, or set it in 60 days. No, but it'd be nice then if we were able to have a planning commission meeting soon after that, too, is the other thing. I don't want to be in the middle of December before we talk about the public hearing.
Yeah.
Commissioner
Day
suggestion.
What would the impacts be of moving this to the 9th instead of the 2nd?
So we wouldn't have to the 9th for what?
For the public hearing and the open house before that.
So we would have the planning commission would then have 3 planning commission meetings that month because we would have to notice a special meeting for the 9th.
Oh boy.
This was canceled.
Or you can cancel one and just have 1 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah. Commissioner Day, I appreciate your point. I would disagree with that because of that. I guess I would entertain a motion.
That we hold a public hearing on Groundwater Grand Mound Submarine Plan update CPA 4 on November 2nd, 2022 at 7 p.m.
It's been moved to hold the public hearing on the Grand Mound Submarine Plan public hearing on November 2nd at 7 p.m.
I have a friendly amendment.
Let's hear it.
To November 16th, our next meeting.
We'll hear on the meeting first. Let's call for a vote on the amendment.
Commissioner Hanson?
Commissioner Hanson, there's a vote for amending the motion to have the public hearing on the 16th of November.
Aye.
Mr. Nelson?
Nay.
Mr. Pessinger?
Aye.
Mr. Day?
Aye.
Mr. Simmons?
Aye.
Mr. Wheatley?
Aye.
Mr. Carmen?
Aye.
Mr. Fullerton?
Aye.
Mr. Casino?
Nay. The motion passes. So now the motion on the floor is to hold the Grand Mound Subarea Plan public hearing on November 16th, 2022 at 7 p.m. Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Call for the vote.
Commissioner Hanson?
Aye.
Commissioner Nelson?
Aye.
Commissioner Messenger?
Aye.
Commissioner Day?
Aye.
Commissioner Simmons?
Aye.
Commissioner Wheatley?
Aye.
Mr. Carmen?
Aye.
Mr. Halverson?
Aye.
Commissioner Casino?
Aye. Motion passes unanimously. So we'll be holding a public hearing on the Grand Mound Subarea Plan on November 16th at 7 p.m. Details will be provided later as staff can put them together. Well, we are actually moving along pretty well, and we can start going through these individual topics again later since we now have plenty of time, and we'll move on to our next work session, which is the agricultural CAO. Thank you, too, for coming. Thank you, Maya. And with that, we'll have Ashley or I come in and start our work session, agenda item 5 on A18, the Agricultural Critical Areas Ordinance Update.
Good evening, everybody. I haven't seen you in a few weeks. I missed you all. I am excited to be here. I'm in a new role, though. I am now Thurston County's Agriculture Community Program Manager.
Congratulations.
Oh. Yay. Oh. So this topic is even, more close. Let's see here. I'm going to go ahead and share my screen. No, I don't. Sorry, I'm listening behind me. So here's our plan for the evening. First, we're going to review the project background and the concept we discussed at the July 20th Planning Commission meeting, because that was a few months ago now. Then we'll follow up on all the great questions you asked before diving into the draft code amendments. And most importantly, we'll reserve plenty of time at the end for discussion and questions. And since I hear November 2nd is open, we'd like to finish the night out with a motion to schedule a public hearing so we can hear from the broader community. So we did briefly cover this in July, but it's worth reviewing both for anyone watching and for context. The county enrolled all of the watershed basins into the state's voluntary stewardship program back in 2011. This is an incentive-based program. Intended to balance the protection and enhancement of critical areas on existing agricultural lands while promoting the viability of agriculture here in the county. The work plan for VSP was approved by the state in 2017, and it does apply to all existing agricultural uses. In 2020, the board docketed an item to update the critical areas regulations that we have in the code, both to recognize the VSP program for the existing agricultural uses and to develop an approach for new agriculture. And to help clarify what falls in the bucket of new agriculture, the VSP Statewide Advisory Committee and Conservation Commission published a policy advisory last year clarifying what constitutes existing versus new. So in terms of our project scope, we're only looking at the new agricultural activities. Let's see here. In accordance with the state's 2021 policy advisory, the following activities are considered new. And would be covered by the county's critical areas ordinance. And that's what we're looking at updating. So we've got lands that were converted to agriculture after July 24, 2012, when the critical areas ordinance was adopted. New agricultural facilities built on existing or new agricultural land, or land that was brought into agriculture, or, and this is probably the most difficult one, expansion of existing agricultural facilities that go outside the existing footprint, even if it's on existing agricultural land. So as I mentioned, the code update we're considering tonight is focused on these three categories. So just keep that in mind as we're walking through stuff. And as we did cover back in July, the state provides for more than one option for new agricultural uses to comply with a critical areas ordinance. And here's what the state critical areas handbook says about conservation planning. Conservation plans are intended to help agricultural operators maintain productive and economically viable agricultural land while protecting and enhancing critical areas and water quality using best available science and effective mitigation measures. Conservation plans can effectively reduce impacts from farm activities on natural resources with solutions unique to each farm to avoid or minimize adverse impacts with mitigation techniques. So what we talked about on July 20th was providing for a conservation planning approach that would be a voluntary option for farmers to go through rather than Title 24. Title 24 would always be there as a default, but this would be an alternative. We're hoping this approach would build on the success of the VSP program and try to find that balance between protection of critical areas and our working farmlands. It would also provide more flexibility and opportunities to incentivize or remove barriers for conservation enhancement projects and climate smart activities. It's not scrolling anymore. Let's see. Where's my mouse? There we go. So here's a quick recap of the concept we did discuss in July. Farmers would work with a technical service provider to prepare the conservation plan. And this would be very similar to the individual stewardship plans that are prepared for VSP. The biggest difference would be the state's requirement to demonstrate no net loss at a site level rather than that watershed basin level. So any identified impacts to critical areas would need to be mitigated with those approved conservation practices or best management practices. Another difference is that these plans would need to be approved and monitored by the county, at least in that initial phase of construction and implementation, rather than the Thurston Conservation District. And if it turns out the benchmarks aren't being maintained, the county would work with the farmer and their technical service provider to adapt those conservation practices. Our goal would be to have the conservation plans be successful. So when I presented all that, you had a number of great questions, and I hope that I've included them all here. I did put in detailed responses in the memo, but I just wanted to go through them real quick, and if there are additional questions, we can address those. So the first one, the applicability date, Commissioner Nelson probably already picked up on this, but I did research other counties that have enrolled in VSP, and it appears that the CAO adoption date of July 24th, 2012 would be the right applicability date. So thank you, Commissioner Nelson, for bringing that one up. There were also concerns brought up about potential resource constraints. I did follow up with both the Thurston Conservation District and the Whatcom County's Conservation and Planning Office for ag lands, and they both indicated that the demand will probably be low. But having said that, when I was talking to the Thurston Conservation District, we would like to monitor the number of requests that come in so that we can make any necessary resource adjustments moving forward. Along those same lines, sort of under that umbrella of addressing resource constraints, you asked me to look into an option for a farmer to complete their own standardized conservation plan rather than working with a technical service provider. It's a good idea. The only one I could find with Commissioner Nelson's help was Whatcom County. So they use a standardized checklist. I met with the manager of Whatcom County's conservation program on ag lands, and they indicated that they only use that checklist for existing ongoing agricultural uses, and it's very narrow. So you can only go through the standardized checklist if you have less than one animal per acre. Wow. One animal unit, I'm sorry, one animal unit per acre. So that's 1,000.
And so in talking to the Thurston Conservation District, we were trying to brainstorm how we could adapt that checklist. It would be difficult because if it's an existing use, the critical area has already been impacted. So you don't necessarily have to do that assessment piece and analysis and then try to tie your conservation practices back to it. They also said that probably aren't going to be a lot of ag operations that are going to fall under that limited one animal unit per acre. So in the draft code, you'll see that we opted not to do the standardized checklist. Having said that, if we find that there are applications that, you know, we could develop one for, kind of keep that option open in the future. Commissioner Pessinger asked how agroforestry would be treated. I did want to point out, it is included in the definition for new agricultural activity. And then we also have included a definition specifically to agroforestry, which means the intentional integration of trees and shrubs into crop and animal farming systems to create environmental, economic, and social benefits, such as alley cropping, forest farming, silvopasture, repairing forest buffers and windbreaks. And these are really important pieces of conservation planning. So it's great that we're going to define them and have them be included and integrated into any type of farm conservation plan. And then the final batch of questions that were asked were about that monitoring and compliance. So reached out to Whatcom County, also dug into Snohomish County and how they do this. So as you know, monitoring and compliance are going to be key components of conservation planning. Since many of the agricultural activities are seasonal in nature, the selected conservation practices may be implemented over time rather than all up front. And so to address this, the conservation plans themselves will have to include a monitoring section so they can talk about when the conservation practice would be implemented, how it should be monitored, and over what period should it be monitored. In addition to that, the proposed code amendment includes provisions for self-assessment and certification by the farmer. This is the piece that's specifically modeled after Whatcom and Snohomish counties. That's how they currently conduct their monitoring for approved conservation plans. I found this interesting. The Whatcom County staff member responsible for monitoring shared that they've seen a really high success rate with more than 90% of farmers submitting their annual self-assessments complete with photos and videos. And that's for their existing ongoing ag uses. They don't really have, their new ones have to go through the critical areas ordinance, so they don't get many of those, but they shared that. So we'll be modeling a lot of our documents on how they do it. Once the initial monitoring period is over and the impacts on critical areas have been mitigated, then the agricultural use would be considered existing ongoing, and then would be monitored under our voluntary stewardship program. And that at this point falls more under the umbrella of Thurston Conservation District working with the county. So we'd be doing that together. And then following our voluntary stewardship program work plan, quarterly monitoring reports would be done, and any of those new agricultural uses would be included. As well as our five-year watershed basin monitoring reports. So they would have to mitigate for any impacts identified in association with that new ag use on site. Once they get those conservation practices in place, then they shift into our VSP program.
Who does the quarterly monitoring?
Thurston Conservation District in the county. So Thurston Conservation District provides us with information that then we use to complete the quarterly monitoring.
So they would go out to the property and look at it?
Depending on what is in that farm conservation plan. Well, in this case, in individual stewardship plans and what's part of that monitoring. You might have seen in the draft code, there are a number of places where we talk about when you submit an application for a farm conservation plan, you then have to allow county staff to go on your site for inspections and monitoring. Now, if you're part of that 90% who are going to do the self-monitoring and submit photos and videos and, you know, assure county staff that you're doing what you said you're going to do, then maybe those inspections don't have to take place as often.
What was that paid for?
The inspection piece. I think that's why Whatcom and Snohomish are doing the self-inspections
self-assessments and certifications to try to cut down on the amount of county staff time. Otherwise, it's wrapped into the permit. So has everyone read the code update? Mm-hmm. Yay, good. Okay. So the code update package includes changes to two sections of code. The first is the repeal and replacement of our old agriculture critical areas, chapter 1715, and the other are minor edits to title 24. Since that would be your default option, we need to make sure that all of the use tables and references are correct. We also pulled sections from 24 and pulled them into 17 to reduce any confusion or duplication. So the new 1715 details out the conservation planning option for new agricultural activities and facilities. So the proposed provisions reflect the concept that we discussed. It does contain a new purpose statement and definitions that are agriculture focused, but then we make sure to refer to both chapter 20, our zoning chapter, as well as chapter 24, critical areas chapter, and say that all those definitions would also apply. There are new sections clarifying existing ongoing versus new agricultural uses. That's a big one for us, is we really want farmers, general public, and our staff to understand what would need to come in for a permit and what doesn't need to come in for a permit. And it's a good time to point out that if this becomes part of our code, we will be doing specific education, like educational pamphlets and outreach about this to help clarify that. We've also included provisions that remove barriers to conservation enhancement projects and climate mitigation activities. This was something that we heard directly from Thurston Conservation District, that for our existing and ongoing farms that might have a new facility, a new ag facility that they're looking to build, specifically a conservation enhancement project, that there are a lot of barriers in place to getting that project on the ground. So there are quite a few provisions in there. If a existing farmer wants to take advantage of this more streamlined process, they do have to provide documentation from Thurston Conservation District, any type of grant information, copy of their individual stewardship plan and whatnot. But we do hope that it's important to at least have it in there and have a pathway available to them. The remaining provisions detail out the farm conservation plan standards, and then the monitoring and compliance that I mentioned. And we have sort of a three-step with, you know, when we determine that a farm conservation plan would be out of compliance. And that's really like you haven't implemented any of the things in your farm conservation plan. You're not working with the county to look at any type of adaptive management and whatnot. So now I really want to reserve as much time for question and answer and discussion. And then I'll come back to inviting you to pass a motion to set a public hearing, if you feel comfortable doing that.
Anybody want to start out with some questions today?
Go ahead, Barry. What type of public outreach has happened on this to date?
Yeah, so I've been to the Agriculture Advisory Committee twice. We're going to be going to the Voluntary Stewardship Program Work Group at their next meeting ahead of any type of public hearing or public comment. Also have another presentation plan for the Agriculture Advisory Committee, and then have reached out to Wazoo Extension, Thurston Conservation District. So more the stakeholders.
More like getting guidance for writing it.
Writing, I mean, the Agriculture Advisory Committee, we hope will give us feedback based on, you know, their knowledge, their relationships with existing ag.
Is that, does that have anything to do with the Thurston County Agricultural Board?
Yeah, it okay. is. Yeah.
That's what you're talking
yes.
about.
Yeah, yeah.
And have there been any open houses today?
Not on this, no. I mean, I think more of the outreach is going to be on what is existing and what is new, and sort of wrapping this into general outreach that we plan on doing for agriculture, like the agriculture program moving forward, versus this kind of one very small technical piece. But we definitely want to get the word out. If something like this comes into play, be great for existing farmers to know
Yeah. That's what I was asking about the agricultural board, because those are existing farmers and what they thought of it.
Yeah.
Scott, maybe you can answer that question.
Don't know. Okay. Oh. Haven't been to an ag committee meeting for a long time.
So, Commissioner Wheatley of it.
Yeah.
Last
year. There's not much, there's no concern about it.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, they're really not that engaged with it, actually, because I don't think they're that concerned about it. Yeah.
They just really don't think there's going to be a lot of new agricultural land developed.
Yeah. Well, and anything that helps new ag, I mean, they're enthused about anything that helps new people come into agriculture, or that helps agriculture to get better resources, you know. So yeah, there's I didn't hear anything negative.
I guess that begs the question, has anybody ever expressed any reservations or concerns about this?
They express frustration about what's currently in place.
But nothing about what you're
in
front of us.
Yeah. No, I think the Ag Advisory Committee is very on board with conservation planning in general, and really believes that there can be a balance if the right conservation practices are implemented. So that's what this would offer, is at least that option to utilize a conservation planning approach.
Mm-hmm. Commissioner Hansen, did you have anything on this one?
Not on this one, thanks.
What about anybody else? Does anybody else have any discussion they want to do on this? Well, if not, I would certainly entertain a motion for if we want to hold a public hearing on this.
Oh, I'm the November 72nd.
Just
all right. Yeah. All right. So,
are you mic'd?
Oh, maybe so. Yeah. Oh, you have a mic. Never mind.
Okay. I will move to schedule a public hearing on November 2nd, 2022. At 7 p.m. or soon thereafter, for development code docket item A18, agricultural uses, critical areas code update, which amends the Thurston County Code Chapter 1715 and Title 24 related.
Okay. It's been moved to second to schedule a public hearing for November 2nd, 2022 at 7 p.m. or soon thereafter. For development code docket item B18, agricultural uses, critical area code update, which amends the county code chapter 1715 of title 24 and title 24 related. With that, call for the vote.
Commissioner Hansen?
Aye.
Commissioner Nelson?
Aye.
Commissioner Fletcher?
Aye.
Commissioner Day?
Aye.
Commissioner Simmons?
Aye.
Commissioner Wheatley?
Aye.
Commissioner Carmen?
Aye.
Commissioner Alderson?
Aye.
Commissioner Casino?
Aye, so that motion passes unanimously. So we'll have a public hearing on November 2nd. Thank you very much. I guess that takes care of that in here. This is good. Any staff updates? Other than we now have an ag planning manager?
Yes. I have a couple of staff updates. I just want to update the board on a couple of items that are moving to the Board of County Commissioners that have moved to the Planning Commissioner, Planning Commission. 822, the Budget Adjustments briefing we held on October 19th at 2 p.m. A6, the SMP, will have its first briefing with the board on October 19th at 2:30 p.m. And the CIP will have a briefing on October 13th at 9 p.m.
Great. Thank you very much. Now that it looks like you're filling some positions, how do your vacancies look?
I still have two associate planner vacancies.
Well, let's hope you can fill those soon. Let's move on to our agenda then. So the next date on that we'll be getting together is October 11th, where we'll be holding a special joint planning commission meeting for the Olympia joint plan with the Olympia Planning Commission. And you all should have been received a Zoom invite and meeting materials from staff earlier today. Is there anybody here that does not think they will be able to make that?
Is it strictly Zoom? Only Zoom?
No, it's going to be held in this board meeting or boardroom here, and then also on Zoom. It'll be hybrid. All right, looks like everybody should be able to be there. Then on October 19th, we don't have anything scheduled yet, but it would not surprise me at all if some grand mal subarea plan work sessions came back through or not, but we'll find out more on October 19th later. Is there anybody here that is not expecting to be here for October 19th?
That's what I want to play.
I think we have too much to do, but thank you for the suggestion. Okay, well, expect a full house. Then again, on November 2nd, we will be holding a public hearing for the A18 Ag CAO, and we'll probably have some other stuff on the list then too, which wouldn't surprise me if we had a Grand Mountain Subarea Plan work session, but we'll see how that goes.
Oh, we can't have Subarea Plan work session that night.
Before the...
That's too close to the hearing.
Is there a rule about how close a...
We can't vote. If we change, we can't make any changes.
Yeah.
Because if we change something, then it screws up the hearing.
But we still want to hear it. We didn't discuss what it does. I mean, there's more to it than just... There's the code language about guidelines, the landscape guidelines.
But what I'm saying is we can't make any decisions that night.
No, but we can have a work session, right?
But what's the point of it? There's no point if we can't make a decision. We can spend an hour here talking about it and not come and just be at the same place.
Can't cover it on the news. Quite possibly. Ms. Pope, you will figure out how to fill our schedule.
Yeah, so... I just communicated with Maya after we do remember what we were planning on for October 19th. We do not have anything planned to move back to the planning commission. We were holding that depending on how things play out tonight. So it can be canceled October 19th.
Oh, we can cancel. You wouldn't have anything else ready?
That's correct.
Does anybody have a complaint about canceling October 19th? Do you want to vote on it or we just cancel it?
No, unanimous consent.
October 19th canceled. But that November 2nd, since we're holding the public hearing for the Ag CAO, and if you bring something else up too, then we'll do that at that time. So is there anybody that's not planning on being here for the public hearing? All right, and we'll expect a full house on that. Agenda item 8 is the for the good of the order. Does anybody else have anything for the good of the order?
I heard at a work session that the BOCC is now not planning to move to Pacific until after the first of the year.
That's news to me. Yeah.
That came out of the meeting this week. Evidently, the problem with the furniture.
Oh.
Okay. Not facility,
but furniture. Yeah, that's why I changed.
I think you already told us that we would not be going there until after the first of the year.
Absolutely.
So it may be a little bit later
than that. Does anybody else have anything? Is it?
There was meeting a lot of pushback on the HCP.
Oh, yeah. I did not watch it, but I've heard the same thing myself.
I had 3 phone calls last night about it.
Yeah.
I was surprised. That's what everyone wanted.
Yeah.
It was more pushback on the charges for the HCP. The
subsidized ones?
The sheet that you put together, the planning department puts together to show how much your permit's going to cost. Something like $2 or $3 a square foot. So if you're building a 1,200 square foot place or you're disturbing 1,200 feet of ground, just a permit for that's $900, whether you have gophers on your property or not.
So there will be a follow-up briefing on the 13th at 12 p.m. On the HCP, if anybody wants to watch that on YouTube.
What's the date on that, Chris?
October 13th at noon.
Yeah.
So next week is busy for you with boundary line adjustments, SMP, CIP, and HCP board briefings.
We have wireless, CIP, A27, the non-conforming CAO. Yes, there it is.
What time is the wireless on the 12th?
It's 1 to 1:30.
Thank you.
And all of those meetings are open to the public. So if you want to show up and sit in the gallery, it's perfectly within your rights to do so.
I just add one more thing.
Yeah.
Also, the BOCC made comments directly concerning the commercial aviation in Thurston County, saying that all of them adamantly oppose it. So that was also done at a board meeting this week.
Yeah. I don't know if you guys all saw that letter, but there's been a lot of concern about that regional airport, and the BOCC is not supportive of putting one in here, and they've said so multiple times. Anything else for the good of the order? Well, with having no further business, this meeting is adjourned.